Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
The U.S. trade deficit surged 18% to $122.1 billion in December of last year, just a couple of months ago. That was a record high. The trade deficit has gotten Trump's attention, and he is correct to give it some brain power. International trade should involve the trading of one nation's goods for another. You know, I produce a lot of great food products, corn-based products and wheat and grain, and your nation is great at producing energy, and we have surpluses of each, and we trade. And both nations benefit. That's trade. It should never consist of a massive and persistent exchange of U.S. imported U.S. imported goods for U.S. dollars. That's what our trade has become. They send us stuff, and we send them little pieces of paper with numbers on it. And this is tantamount to selling pieces of your country's future production away piece by piece, along with the usurpation of American sovereignty. Trump is trying to fix this problem through tariffs, which should be used as a last resort because they are disruptive, very disruptive, to economic growth. Tariffs, after all, are taxes on imports. That's what tariffs are. Tariffs are taxes, and they're paid by American importers. But, and this is a big but, a 25% tariff does not raise prices by 25%. Not at all. It's a very simplistic, sophomoric way of looking at it. The country the tariff is imposed on could, for example, lower prices to offset the tax. So the consumer would see no change in prices. The country, say China, for example, could lower the value of its currency, thus leaving the dollar value of the imported good unchanged. We could also source these products from other nations not subject to tariffs. Also, the U.S. importer could just reduce the profit margin and not pass the tax along to the consumer. The bottom line is that while tariffs are disruptive, they do not lead to inflation. At worst, they lead to a one-time increase in the level of prices, and that is not inflation. I mean, you know, after all, inflation is caused when a fiat currency loses its support from the market, and the market just sells the currency, and it loses its purchasing power. That doesn't come from tariffs. But tariffs do cause trade friction and therefore act as a depressant to economic growth. Retaliatory tariffs exacerbate that friction. This makes Wall Street's estimate of over 14% earnings per share growth an even bigger fiction. That's what they think, that EPS share growth will be this year in 2025. 14%. Tariffs are more of a growth inhibitor than an inflationary progenitor. In the long term, tariffs can restore Americans or help restore America's manufacturing base, help balance our current account deficit, and ensure we no longer mortgage our future production to foreign countries. But for now, they are a headwind to GDP growth. Of course, trading Trump's actions can be a dizzying exercise. The tariff switch is flickering on and off like a strobe light. Tariffs on, tariffs off. Tariffs suspended. You just can't trade your account according to what Trump says or promises. Nevertheless, Trump may need to raise tariffs to help pay for the extension of the tax cuts scheduled to expire in December. He may need to use that revenue. Tariffs are coming, in my opinion, and they should be significant in scope. But then there's Congressman James Smith of Missouri, for example, who said that any revenues derived from tariffs cannot be used in the reconciliation process to offset tax cuts. Now, I'm not an expert in congressional or Senate parliamentary procedures. I'm not. And very few people are, and these rules can change. But you need to remember this. Remember, any bill passed using the reconciliation process must be revenue neutral in the 10-year budget horizon. According to the Congressional Budget Office, extending the Trump tax cuts would cost $4.5 trillion over that 10-year horizon. I'm just bewildered as to where Congress will find that kind of money to offset the tax cuts, because you can't touch Social Security. Another one of these rules that could change. All these rules are fungible and interchangeable and really can be abrogated because of an emergency. So who knows? Let's just see what happens. But there's an awful lot of revenue that has to be raised, or perceived revenue, if you're going to extend the tax cuts. Of course, most tax cuts pay for themselves in reality through the growth they inspire, in my opinion. But that view is not shared with the Congressional Budget Office, and hence they must find a way to raise revenue elsewhere or cut spending dramatically. Point here is that tax cuts are not a slam dunk, and they will not happen quickly, and they will not occur easily. The U.S. imposed an additional 10% tariff on Chinese imports this week. China then retaliated with an additional tariff on up to 15% on U.S. coal and natural gas imports starting February 10th. They will also slap an additional 10% duty on American oil, farm equipment, and some cars and trucks, as well as export controls on critical rare earth minerals. Trump also put a 30-day pause on the 20% tariffs he promised to put on Canada and Mexico that he said there was no way they can be discussed or negotiated. They're coming on. And then, of course, they were supposed to start February 8th, and then they gave a 30-day moratorium. By the way, China also launched an antitrust investigation into Google. You know, you get the point here. Tariffs create trade friction, and that leads to slowing growth because it's also a tax. But the major issue here is the S&P 500 is already trading at a very lofty 23 times that fictitious 14% earnings per share growth. The multiple is way too high historically, and it's on a growth estimate that is not going to happen. It's just way overly, extremely optimistic. Tariffs, along with a reduced labor force from immigration reforms, should lead to lower monthly non-farm payroll reports and slower GDP growth and earnings per share growth. Now, of course, immigration is essential. Immigration reforms are essential. And getting the criminals out of this country is essential. But a reduced labor force growth rate does lead, in the short term, to lower economic growth. The threat of tariffs pulled forward demand for imports from the election in November to the January 20th inauguration. However, the increased level of business uncertainty is beginning to take effect. To this point, business owners began to reduce the desire for new hires starting in December. According to the JOLTS survey, job openings tumbled to 7.6 million, the lowest since September, and below the Dow Jones estimate for 8 million. The ADP report for January came in at 183,000 net new jobs versus the 150,000 estimate, which is somewhat better than expected, but still far below the December non-farm payroll report, which came in at 256,000 net new jobs. The ISM January services headline figure came in at 52.8 versus the estimate of 54, which is a miss. Business activity fell to 54.4 from 58 in the prior month, and new orders fell to 51.3 to 54.4. This is evidence that the economy continues to be weak and is slowing. Meanwhile, the increased uncertainty is not helping to unfreeze the thick ice, pack ice, surrounding the real estate market. Mortgage applications to buy a home are now 39% lower than they were in February of 2019 in the pre-pandemic era. Home sales are running at a near 30 year low. Meanwhile, home prices nationally continue to hit record highs, along with the home price to income ratio. That is a very scary combination. A dysfunctional housing market, as far as sales are concerned, and record home price to income ratios. Throw in taxes and insurance costs into the mix, and the tenuous position of home values becomes even more unstable. How healthy can the economy and banking system really be when the all-important housing market is in a transactional depression? And most importantly, the odds of a significant decline in prices, and 20% or more in my estimate, are extremely high, especially when, not if, when the recession arrives. The truth is that tariffs and a shrinking labor force will happen months before any tax cuts can occur. Therefore, economic growth and earnings growth should be woefully inadequate to move the major averages significantly higher in the next 3 months. Choosing the correct sectors and individual equities is always critical. During the 2018 Trump tariff wars, owning dividend payers and defensive stocks was the most beneficial positioning for investors. We remain net long 20% defensive equities with an overweight position in treasuries. We own about a 5% inflation protection, which includes gold and energy-related investments, which are doing very well. There is no immediate recession imminently occurring, but there is a slowing of economic growth in the context of extreme valuations and extremely unprecedented concentrated positions. The housing market is as frozen as Wall Street's buy and hold 60-40 portfolio. Pento Portfolio Strategies is liquid and agile.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.